First up is State versus McCallum. Is that right?
Morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Cooper Offenbecker, and along with my co-counsel, David Allen, I represent appellant Gary McCallum. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. This Court should reverse Gary McCallum's conviction for assault in the second degree and remand for a new trial. The trial court failed to protect Mr. McCallum's state and federal constitutional privilege not to testify when the court failed to give what is known as a Carter instruction, and in Washington is recognized as WPIC 6.31, which tells the jury that it is not permitted to draw an adverse inference from the defendant's exercise of his privilege not to testify. And it appears from the record in this case that everybody, the court, the prosecutor, and the defense attorney, just forgot about the instruction. And this is an instruction that protects a fundamental constitutional right that, like the presumption of innocence, the burden of proof, proof beyond a reasonable doubt standard, makes up the framework for a fundamentally fair criminal trial. And this court should find that it was error not to give it in this case. We know, because of human nature, first of all, and because what the U.S. Supreme Court has told us, and frankly what the Washington Supreme Court has told us as well, that jurors undoubtedly are going to notice the fact that the defendant didn't testify. But the first time that it comes up in deliberations, the first time one of the jurors brings up this fact, there should be another juror to pull out WPIC 6.31 and say, hey, the judge told us we can't consider that under this particular instruction. And without
counsel, let me ask you, is the appellant want a rule that the court should give it even if no one asked for it?
Well, under these particular facts, yes. When there's no indication that it was strategic, there's no indication that this was a tactical decision, the record is entirely silent whatsoever, yes, the court has a duty to give it under these particular facts because of the inherent danger.
Well, if the inquiry has to do with strategy or tactics, then why isn't the claim an ineffective assistance claim?
Well, Your Honor,
under the Strickland standard.
Well, that's a claim that could be raised in another proceeding, of course. But in this proceeding,
Couldn't it have been raised in this proceeding?
Well, I suppose it could have, but the decision was made to proceed on this particular strategy, which is that the court has a duty.
The difference, though, is that Strickland has a prejudice burden for those that advance such a claim.
Well,
do you get to pick and choose how to frame your claim in order to avoid showing prejudice?
Well, no. For a direct appeal, all we're allowed to argue about is the facts that we have in evidence. And all we have in evidence right now is that the record is entirely silent as to why this instruction wasn't given. And the court, you know, because of the dangers of this, of not giving this instruction, the court does have a duty to make sure that these fundamental rights are protected.
Well, isn't one of the dangers, though, that we're concerned about is courts getting in between lawyers and their clients? We don't require the trial court, for instance, to question a defendant when the defendant chooses not to testify as to why he's not testifying. We don't require the court to question a defendant before he testifies as to why he's chosen to testify. We leave those concerns, because they're tactical, to the Sixth Amendment counsel that he's been afforded. Why doesn't this just fall
well,
in that same category?
I think that particular decision, the defendant's decision to testify, have you discussed that with your lawyer and so forth, that's of an entirely different character than the court's duty to provide sort of the basic framework of the constitutional structure for the jurors to consider and weigh the evidence. And the reason why it's so important is because the jurors don't know what the law is. Anyone who has ever watched voir dire in a criminal trial knows that, defense attorneys frequently ask prospective jurors, do you expect the defendant to testify? Are you going to hold it against him if he doesn't? And there will be jurors in the veneer who raise their hand and say, yeah, I expect him to testify. Isn't he supposed to testify? If he were innocent, I think he would testify.
Did that happen here?
Well, we don't have we haven't evaluated the record on voir dire, so we don't know. But the important part is the court didn't correct any of those misconceptions.
Well, how do we know if we don't have the record of voir dire? Well, just assume that the misperception.
Instructions in voir dire. We can't rely on instructions in voir dire as the framework for the instructions that go back to the jury.
I didn't talk about instructions in voir dire. You were talking about prejudice being demonstrated.
But my example was for the purposes of explaining that, look, the jurors don't come in with an understanding of the law and the constitutional principles. It's the court's job to correct that and tell them what the law is. And, you know, the jurors swear an oath to uphold the instructions, and the law presumes that, in fact, the jurors do follow the instructions. And
would you agree, counsel, that some defense lawyers don't want that instruction?
Well, I think that is true because there's a number of...
Given that it's true, don't you put the court in an awkward position if the lawyer really has thought about it and the judge says in front of the lawyer's client, the lawyer, how come you're not doing X, giving this instruction?
Well, I don't think it puts the lawyer in an awkward position to the extent...
Does he have to answer the question?
Well, I think there has to be something on the
record. Does he have to reveal, while his opponent is standing there, his mental processes as to why he did or didn't request an instruction?
I don't think he has to reveal
that.
Well,
how can the court ever get a satisfactory understanding of the concern that Judge Leach just raised?
Well, I think there has to be some indication in the record that it was considered. You know, we can't presume a waiver of a fundamental constitutional right from a silent record. And in Carter, Carter versus Kentucky, the court said that instructions on basic...
Then let's come back to that. If that was so, and if this qualified for that, wouldn't this be ineffective assistance per se?
Well...
Not to request it, just ineffective assistance per se.
Well...
If a lawyer could never have a legitimate strategic reason for not requesting this instruction, that would just state it, right?
I'm not arguing that it's could never be strategic. I'm arguing that under these particular facts, there's no evidence in the record to suggest that it was strategic, and the court can't presume that waiver in this case.
We're only talking about waiver if we're talking or strategy if we're talking about ineffective assistance. Waiver is only, you only waive something that you have a right to have. Is there any case in America that holds that this instruction must be given even when it's not requested by the defendant?
There's not a case that I have found in my research, but I think that the reasoning and the conclusions of the U.S. Supreme Court compel that conclusion.
Is it required to show a waiver of a right that no court has recognized as existing?
Well, I think this court should find that under these particular facts, this court should have given the instruction or required some kind of waiver. That in Carter and Lakeside, the U.S. Supreme Court put this instruction on an equal footing with the presumption of innocence and proof beyond a reasonable doubt.
Well, it didn't really, because if you read Justice Stevens' concurrence, he emphasized that the instruction was only required if requested. That's not true about instructing the jury about the presumption of innocence.
You can answer Judge Leach in 10 minutes when you've got 2 minutes.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the Court, I'm Kathleen Weber, and I represent the State of Washington.
Why shouldn't this just have to be given in every case?
Well, the issue before the Court today, again, is whether or not there's a constitutional requirement to give it in every case. And I think looking at the case authority that has addressed this issue, not this specific issue, because, again, I have not found any case that has said the court must constitutionally give this issue in the absence of a request. But if you look at the cases that have decided this issue in the context of cases where a request has been made and the instruction has not been given, or the court has given the instruction over the defendant's objection, the language of the court suggests that there is no constitutional obligation. Let's start with Washington law to begin with. I cited the court a couple of 1920s era cases in which the first case in 1928, State versus Pavlich, was considering Article 1, Section 9, which is Washington's equivalent to the Fifth Amendment. And in that case, the court said if the defendant requests a no adverse inference instruction, the court must give it pursuant to our constitutional provisions. 1 year later, in State versus Zupin, the court, using Pavlich as authority for its position, said absent a request, no instruction, no adverse inference instruction must be given. So you fast forward to 1960s era, there's a case from our state Supreme Court that again reiterates that absent a request, the court isn't required to give an instruction, but it's not error to give it over the defendant's objection, which is right in line with what the U.S. Supreme Court has decided under the Fifth Amendment. If you look at the language
If it's not error to give it, even when the defendant is objecting, doesn't that indicate that whether it's tactical or strategic on the part of the defense counsel is irrelevant?
No, it's not. Because in cases in which the defendant did not, or the defense counsel did not request the instruction, and the defendant subsequently gets convicted, as in this case, and then argues on appeal the court should have given it, then the question of whether or not it's tactical is important if an ineffective assistance of counsel claim is raised. It was not raised in this case. The defendant has head-on claimed that it was the trial court that erred in failing to give this instruction.
Yeah, but if the U.S. Supreme Court has said it's error not to give this instruction when it's requested, and then it said it's not error to give this instruction even when the defendant doesn't want it, why wouldn't it be error not to give the instruction when it's not even mentioned? I mean, if you can impose it on the defendant,
right,
over his own objection,
right,
why shouldn't it just be imposed in every case, regardless of whether the defendant asked for it or not? If he has no opinion on it, that's certainly a lesser intrusion on his Sixth Amendment rights to counsel than when he has an actual objection to it.
Well, I have a couple of answers to that question. Number one, by the language of Carter and some later cases, the court has indicated that there are circumstances in which, A, the court is not required to give it, or B, the court may not give it. In Carter versus Kentucky, the specific holding of the court was, we hold that a state judge has a constitutional obligation upon proper request to minimize the danger that the jury will give evidentiary weight to a defendant's failure to testify by giving that instruction. So by qualifying it by upon proper request, the court signaled that the defendant had some kind of an obligation before the court was obligated to give that instruction. And later cases, James versus Kentucky, the whole discussion was whether or not the defendant had made a proper request. In Lakeside versus Oregon, the court, in finding that there was not constitutional error to give the instruction over the defendant's objection, followed up by saying courts are free to enact rules in various states that would preclude a judge from giving this instruction over the defendant's objection. We're just saying that in the absence of such a rule, it's not error to give it over the defendant's instructions. So the courts have really signaled that.
Article 1, Section 9, is there a Supreme Court explication of whether or not that's viewed the same as the federal Constitution?
I believe it is, and I will supply the court with supplemental authority after this argument on that issue.
So the analysis wouldn't vary?
No, I don't believe so. No, but I will follow up with some supplemental authority on it.
Obviously, you're right. The 1920s and 30s cases that you cited would only be
that would relate
to the Constitution, since,
correct,
unremarkably, the federal Constitution didn't apply until, like, right, 1962.
Right. Essentially, what the defense relies on in this case to argue that the court should impose it, even if the defense counsel has a strategic reason for not requesting it, is supposition. And that supposition is that, sure, people are going to notice that the defendant didn't testify. And I don't dispute that. But the court goes on to say that that jurors may possibly draw an adverse inference from it. And that's the justification and the reason why a court should constitutionally be required to give that instruction if it's requested by the defense. But even in this division of this court, the court has said that while it's not error, you shouldn't give it unless it's requested. And that was the State versus Early case, I believe, that the defense cited. East case, I'm sorry, that the defense cited. So courts have regularly recognized that it is a strategic decision on defense counsel's part as to whether or not to grant it. I disagree with the argument that the record here does not suggest that there was a strategic decision. I don't think that the court is ever required. I don't know of any case where a court has ever required there to be an on-the-record discussion between defense counsel as to whether or not they're actually making a strategic decision in the context of ineffective assistance of counsel cases. Courts can infer from the record that a strategic decision was made. And in here, in this case, we don't know whether or not there was a discussion with jurors about whether or not they would hold it against her client if he didn't testify. I mean, very well likely there was a decision, a discussion about that, and perhaps jurors promised that they wouldn't hold it against him if he didn't testify, and counsel didn't feel that there was a necessity for that instruction.
Was
but more clearly
argued?
Pardon?
Was the silence argued?
Nobody argued the defendant's silence, and in this case,
well, that would have been clear error.
Yeah, that's true. That would have been clear error, and this would have been a different case.
Did the defendant's counsel mention it?
She did not talk about the fact that her client didn't testify. She reiterated frequently the instruction to the court, to the jury, that the defendant bore no burden of proof, and the prosecutor never touched on it either. What was introduced through the state's case in chief, however, was the defendant's explanation of what happened that night. And so from that, one can reasonably infer that counsel decided that no instruction was necessary because the defendant's statements were already before the court, albeit not in the form of testimony, but she might have concluded that this jury would not have drawn a distinction between.
Was there any evidence in this case that was excluded such that had the defendant testified, a door might have been opened and to something else coming in?
Not to my recollection.
No prior convictions or anything like that?
No, not to my recollection.
So we just have sort of an absence of understanding.
Right. Basically, there was no reason for the defendant to testify. He had everything to gain by not testifying and everything to lose by testifying. You know, under the
circumstances, explanation was before the jury without it being subject to cross-examination.
Correct. So I think the court can reasonably infer from, at least from this record, that trial counsel did actually make a strategic decision to not request the instruction, because as courts in this state have recognized that sometimes attorneys do make that decision because they don't want to ring the bell. They don't want to reemphasize the elephant in the room, that the defendant didn't testify, and possibly get the discussion going that maybe the jurors should draw some adverse inference from it. So I think that given the case authority from our state and given the language from the Supreme Court decisions suggesting that court doesn't have to give it in the absence of an instruction, and the lack of any authority that specifically says that the court has a constitutional duty to give the instruction in the absence of a request, that the state is asking this court to affirm the defendant's conviction. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Returning to the question that was at hand before the state made its presentation, I looked at Justice Stevens' concurrence, and it's a very short concurrence, and it essentially says that, I write to say that this should be left to the defendant and his lawyer, and that's essentially what the concurrence says. The majority opinions in both Carter and Lakeside essentially put this on the same level as presumption of innocence and proof beyond a reasonable doubt.
Lakeside says that the court could have a rule that prohibits the judge from giving the instruction if the defendant objects.
Well, Lakeside said it was not error to give it. In
counsel just told us that there was language in Lakeside to the effect that while a court could give the no adverse inference instruction over the defendant's objection, courts could adopt rules that prevent trial judges from doing that.
Right, and And I think that's...
Does that suggest that it's not a constitutionally required instruction?
Well, I think that, you know, Lakeside said, along that same line of reasoning, said, well, the better practice is, or one option is to not give the instruction if the defendant objects. And so that's sort of where we're left. But I think that under these facts, when there's absolutely no indication that it's strategic or tactical, the court has an obligation to provide the appropriate framework. And when we talk about, the state talks about, well, the appellant relies on supposition and possibility, that's not the case. When we look at East, this court said nothing would be more natural than for the jurors to draw an adverse inference from the lack of testimony by the very person who should know most. We know because of that decision, because of the U.S. Supreme Court decisions, that they will draw adverse inferences, and accordingly, the court should reverse and remand. Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor.
Sage Group and Cotter.